Krishna Prasthaya Vajalesi Mati Bhaktivananta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharani Nirvasesa Sinyavani Paskatyade Satarani Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Texts 29 to 33. So I guess we're going to read 33 together, then I'll go back and read the other ones. Aho vidartra karunena na prabho. Bhavan pranito dviga gocharandasam. Taken away, drik, of sight, agocharam, beyond the range, dasham, to a state, ushinaranam, to the inhabitants of the state of Ushinara. Asi, you were, vrittidha, giving livelihood, pura, formally, krittaha, finished, adhuna, now, yena, by whom, shucham, of lamentation, divardhanaha, increasing. So again, this is Hiranyakashipu is speaking to his sister-in-law and his nephews about the death of Hiranyaka by Varahadev. And he's trying to pacify them that they shouldn't be lamenting. And in the context of this, he's telling a story about a king who died on the battlefield and his many queens were lamenting. So this is the description of that and the words of the queen. So we're going to go back to 29 and read through the translations to get back to this verse. So starting with 29, reading the translation. This is describing the dead king. His golden bejeweled armor smashed, his ornaments and garlands fallen from their places, his hair scattered, and his eyes lusterless. The slain king lay on the battlefield, his entire body smeared with blood, his heart pierced by the arrows of the enemy. When he died, he had wanted to show his prowess, and thus he had bitten his lips, and his teeth remained in that position. So here's the dead body, and it's still like this. His beautiful lotus-like face was now black and covered with dust from the battlefield. His arms, with his sword and other weapons, were cut and broken. When the queens of the king of Ushinara saw their husband lying in that position, they began crying, "O Lord, now that you have been killed, we also have been killed." Repeating these words again and again, they fell down, pounding their breasts at the feet of the dead king. Purport. As stated here, Rabasa Dashta Dachadam. The dead king, while fighting in anger, bit his lips to show his prowess. But nonetheless, he was killed by providence, did he not? This proves that we are controlled by higher authorities. Our personal power or endeavor is not always supreme. We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. Text 32, translation. As the queens loudly cried, their tears glided down their breasts, becoming reddened by the kumkum powder, and fell upon the lotus feet of their husband. Their hair became disarrayed, their ornaments fell, and in a way that evokes sympathy from the hearts of others, the queens began lamenting their husband's death. And the translation for 33, O Lord, you have now been removed by cruel providence to a state beyond our sight. You had previously sustained the livelihood of the inhabitants of Ushinara, and thus they were happy, but your condition now is the cause of their unhappiness. So I want to focus on this purport to 29-31, where Srila Prabhupada is talking about how the king wanted to show how powerful he was. So he was biting his lips, and even when he died, his face stayed in that position, but still he was defeated. Prabhupada says this proves we are controlled by higher authorities. Our personal power or endeavor is not always supreme. Do we experience this? We have some desire, we make some effort. Does it always work? Anybody here Please raise your hand if your plans always work. Always work. Anybody here? Your plans always work? No?
What opposite?
What about opposite? Do anyone have your plans? Sometimes they fail? Whose plans sometimes fail? Some people, they have no plans, so they're not even working or failing. So what is Prabhupada's conclusion? We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. So there's something very funny about this verse. If we remember who is speaking this verse. So who is speaking this verse is Hiranyakashipu. And he's also very powerful. Now, of course, he's more powerful than this king. But still, he's telling a story of how a powerful king was defeated. That means he will also be defeated. And Prabhupada's saying here, therefore we must accept. Is Hiranyakashipu accepting? No. He will die like this king. He's actually telling his own future. Of course, his death's a little better because he gets killed by God. A lot better. But the principle is there. In one sense, Vidusarva Hastaham, everyone's being killed by God in one sense. And although he's telling this story to instruct others, you should accept the will of Providence. He doesn't accept the will of Providence. He is trying to become Providence. So this is very funny. Do we sometimes have somebody, they give us advice, and they don't follow that advice? You've had this experience, yes? They are telling us, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. And we look at them and we say, but you are not doing it. And maybe, possible, not for any of us, I'm sure, but it's possible, maybe we also do this. That we are preaching to others, you do this, you do this, you do this, and we are not doing it. I'll tell you a very funny story. This is a true story, and it happened to a friend of mine just 2-3 days ago. So this friend of mine was being told, you, in your class, you were giving class on the Shastra, and you said something wrong. And my friend said, no, I did not say anything wrong. And the other, yes, you did say something wrong. So there was a tape recording. So the person who gave the class, they were listening to their own class, and listening, trying to find, what did I say, what did I say? And while they were listening to their own class, they heard themselves saying, you should be humble, you should be tolerant, you should not defend yourself. And here they were trying to defend themselves. But my friend was telling me this story. So then they went to the person who was criticizing and said, whatever you say, it's okay. I accept your chastisement. And they were telling me this was so funny, I ended up being helped by my own class. But at first, although I was telling others, I was not doing it. So Hiranyakashipu was such a good example of this. He's telling his relatives, you should surrender to Providence, accept the will of Providence. Don't keep fighting. But he is fighting. He doesn't surrender at all. Even he is, we've talked about before, he's ruling the whole universe. He got this benediction from Brahma that he would have no enemies. He was controlling everything. And he didn't say, okay, now I can just enjoy. He wanted, as Shakespeare says in Macbeth, he wanted to make sure, doubly sure. So he practically destroyed the Earth planet. For no reason, he already had everything. But he didn't feel peaceful.
He didn't feel like, I'm sure I have everything. So he couldn't accept even at that level. Even at that level. Imagine if you had enough money that you couldn't possibly spend it in 200 lifetimes and still you were making more money. So that was his position, except that he was hurting people in doing this. So we may wonder, what is this acceptance? What does it mean? We must therefore accept the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. Or like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharma Vrijaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vrija. And we may think this Sharanam, this surrender, this acceptance, we may think of it like surrender on the battlefield. You know, I surrender. So we often don't do it. Again, we may talk about you should surrender to Krishna. And then we look in our heart and we see, maybe I'm not yet surrendered to Krishna. So I want to look at this a little bit. So this king is showing his prowess. And he gets defeated. But Arjuna also shows prowess. We may think, if I accept the order of the Lord, that means I don't show any prowess anymore. I become like a little mouse. Okay, I just accept that we never fight. So there's fighting against Krishna, and there's fighting for Krishna. Arjuna was showing great prowess. Correct? Yes? Hanuman. Prabhupada would many times say, people think the Vaishnava, they're just going to the Himalayas. Or they're always just He said, but you have not seen the Vaishnavas. Arjuna is a Vaishnava. Hanuman is a Vaishnava. What about Bhim? He is also a Vaishnava. And even in recent Indian history, we were just in Manipur and we saw this beautiful drama, dance drama, of this King Bhagyachandra who lived in the 1700s. Great Vaishnava. Krishna personally came to see him. And he was a fighter. Sometimes he was defeated, sometimes he was victorious, but he was always fighting for Krishna. And prowess for Krishna means, like Krishna tells Arjuna, you fight for the sake of fighting without concern for gain or loss, victory or defeat. The Pandavas were also sometimes defeated in gambling at least, not in fighting. They had to go into exile by Kshatriya Dharma. They had to go into exile. And one year they had to live incognito, which was very humiliating. You're the emperor of the world, and then you have to stay as just a courtier to the king. Empress Draupadi is just a servant. And such a servant that when Kichak is threatening her, the king of Virat doesn't take any action to protect her. Nakul and Sahadeva were taking care just of the cows and the horses. Bhima is a cook. And what to speak of Arjuna? I mean, that is very embarrassing. That's not a small thing. You may read the story and say, oh, but if you think if it were to happen to you. So they were always willing to fight for Krishna. And if they were victorious and became the world emperor, they accepted. If they were exiled and humiliated, they accepted. They didn't give up their prowess. They didn't become depressed. Or they didn't become passive. Accepting isn't passive. So accepting the will of the Lord accepting the position offered to the Lord does not mean that one has no prowess or one does not fight. One fights for Krishna. One acts for Krishna. One has energy. Prowess is energy. One has energy and enthusiasm. And then whatever the result, that is Krishna's business. Now, how does one do that? One does that, Krishna says, to do yoga, which is the art of all work. Karmapala Tyaga, he explains in the 12th chapter. You give up the pala. Generally, we are working for a particular fruit. And our concept of enjoyment and success is tied to that fruit. I'm taking a seed, I'm planting it. I'm not enjoying planting it. I'm thinking I will get the mangoes. And then I'm watering it. I'm not enjoying watering it. I'm thinking I will enjoy in the future. I am like the donkey with the carrot over there, over in the future. And the tree is growing and I'm thinking I will get the mango. I'll get the mango over there, over there. And sometimes there's no mango. Sometimes something happens with the weather and there's no mango. Or sometimes the mango's not good. Maybe worms are in it. So I'm working. And when it comes to enjoy the fruit, maybe there's no fruit. Or maybe it's not good. Or even if it is good, I enjoy it, finish, then I'm working for another one. So fruit of work means suffer, 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 little enjoy. Suffer, 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 disappointment. Suffer, 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 disappointment. Suffer, 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 little enjoy. This is life. That is fruited work. Always focused on future. I'm full of fear. Maybe I won't get the fruit. Maybe somebody will steal my fruit. Maybe there'll be a storm will knock down my tree. Maybe the worms will eat my fruit. And therefore full of anger. Did you take my mango? So yoga is different. Yoga is when I'm putting the seed in the ground, Krishna, this is for you. And therefore one is enjoying putting the seed in the ground. When I'm watering, Krishna, this tree is for you. And therefore you are getting joy from watering. And you are called every minute. Therefore, Prabhupada says in the end of Bhagavad Gita, when Sanjaya says, I'm remembering this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna with a thrill at every moment. If you are in yoga, then there should be a thrill at every moment. And the fruit is not more or less thrill than every moment. Therefore, if there's no fruit, it doesn't matter. Because you're having enjoyment at every moment. So you're using your prowess, your energy, your talents for Krishna, and at every moment you're offering them to Krishna. Just like Srila Prabhupada left this world before translating the whole Bhagavatam. The last chapter he translated was chapter 13 of the 10th canto. But every moment he's translating, he's already feeling this is perfect. He left before the temple in Juru was opened. So if you're a fruitive worker, you think, oh, if my work is not complete, then how will I enjoy it? And always, sochati kanchati, hankering for the fruit and lamenting. Why did I not do this in the past? Why did this person take the fruit? But in Brahma-bhuta, one is prasannatma, one is always joyful. Because I'm giving this moment to Krishna, this moment. That is what it means accept. Therefore, acceptance is not resignation. Acceptance is joy. And when you actually accept, you have more energy. If we're trying to enjoy the fruits and be the controller, as Prabhupada's saying here, he was trying to be the controller. With your false ego, hankara vimudhatma karta hamiti manyate, I am the doer, I will create this result. And then you think, accept, oh, okay, I have to accept I'm not the controller. I can't get what I want. I guess life is just miserable. I just have to suffer on my karma. We think that's what acceptance means. It's not. Acceptance means, Krishna, you are the controller. Why is that joyful? Why does that bring peace and joy? Because the one who is controlling, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, Maha Ishwaram, the great controller, is also Suradam. Rud means heart, Su, very dear to. He's very dear to my heart. If someone who loves us is controlling our life, just like the little child and the mommy and daddy there, and the child can just be happy, peaceful. The child is sleeping on the motorbike. Mommy and daddy are taking care. So Krishna's taking care. Aham Bijapada Pita. He's the father of everyone. He loves us. So this accepting is joyful. I accept, Krishna, that you're running the show. And therefore, I can give all my energy, and I feel energized by giving my energy. A fruitive worker feels exhausted. You work. I work so hard, and nobody appreciates me, and it didn't work out right, and everything is a failure, and you become exhausted. But when you're working for Krishna, every moment is a success. It doesn't matter if the temple gets built or the temple doesn't get built. The book gets published, the book doesn't get published. You get the job, you don't get the job. Your child recovers, your child doesn't recover. It doesn't matter. You know that Krishna's in control, and therefore everything that is happening is for the good from your loving friend. And therefore you can give full energy because you're getting back that joy immediately. It's like a perpetual motion machine. You're giving to Krishna with full prowess and he's immediately reciprocating with joy. Here it's saying Krishna's plans are what's going to happen. So make our plans in harmony with Krishna's plans. Now some people think, well, that means Krishna has to tell me, turn left, turn right. Krishna has a big plan to bring everybody to spiritual consciousness. Cooperate with that plan. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotype. There's so much space. Sometimes Prabhupada says Mahaprabhu's plan is to make the whole universe Krishna conscious. So that's enough work for everybody. To find some way that we can use our talents, our desires, our ability in harmony with Krishna. Now a question always arises. If I'm going to accept, Prabhupada says, we must therefore accept the position offered to us. So the question always arises, should we ever take countermeasures to problems? Does acceptance mean that when there's a problem, I don't do anything to counter it? What does acceptance mean? I've been talking about what acceptance means internally, our mentality. What does it mean as far as our external behaviors? So we see that again, taking the example of Arjuna or Hanuman, they did something to counter the situation. Hanuman didn't just say, well, Ravana has Sita, oh well, too bad. We'll just accept. He did something to counter. But we see, Prahlad Maharaj did not. We're coming soon to Prahlad. He did not. Prahlad Maharaj did not fight against his father. So what is the difference? So Prahlad Maharaj is just a 5-year-old boy. And his father's running the whole universe. How's he going to fight? What's he going to do? Another example is Haridas Thakur in the modern age, when the government officials were beating him. How was he going to fight? It was the government. What are you going to do? They come and put you in chains, and it's the government. So first thing, if you're going to say, should we counter, is it possible to counter? Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes the means to counter is not available to us. During the days of the communist regime in the USSR, sometimes our ISKCON members would become arrested for printing Bhagavad Gitas and selling Bhagavad Gitas, and they'd be put into prison and beaten and starved and tortured. And what could they do? They couldn't run away from the prison. So sometimes there is no external counter method available. Then you have to externally also accept the situation. And internally you find joy that this is Krishna's plan. Now suppose there are external counter methods. Then you have to ask, is the external counter method legal? Is it moral? Is it ethical? Would it please Krishna? This was, of course, Arjuna's question. He says, yes, Krishna, I can counter people like Bhishma and Drona, but I don't think it's ethical. I think it will be sinful. So because the counteracting method is sinful, I'm not going to do it. And then Krishna said, no, actually, in this case, it's not sinful. So that's the next question. Is my method of counteraction, is it something that's a good method? Not just that the ends justify the means, but I look at the means also. And the main thing I look at is, will this means of counteraction help me get closer to Krishna? So sometimes we see when a person has problems in their life, they get so involved to counteract those problems. They stop reading the Shastra. They stop their practices of sadhana and bhakti and yoga. Or they give up their good qualities. They become cruel and nasty and offensive. So one has to ask, if my way of counteracting will get me closer to Krishna, if in order to deal with this difficult situation, I will think about Krishna more, I will chant Krishna's names more, I will read the Bhagavad Gita more, I will become more humble, I will become more tolerant, then go ahead and counteract like that. So this accepting our position, it is really a very joyful act of will. It is not a destruction of the will, but it is a voluntary giving of our will. Something like when people get married, they voluntarily give their will to each other. Or when you have a child, you voluntarily give your will to the child, especially a very young child, the mother with the very young child. And Prabhupada would say this love of the mother for the young child, it's the closest thing we can see to love of God in this world, even among the animals. How the mother will protect and defend the child even at the risk of their own life. And a little baby, when the baby needs you, whatever else you have to do, you cannot do. So it is this kind of acceptance in love. It is not a resignation. And we should see that we should not be foolish like Hiranyakashipu, simply talking about surrender to others, telling our family and friends and co-workers or the general public, you should surrender to Krishna. You should accept Krishna. You should accept the will of the Lord and you'll be happy. And then, when the will of the Lord comes before us, we fight it foolishly like Hiranyakashipu. We have the sweetest thing. So sweet. Krishna says in the 6th chapter that upon gaining this, they think there is no gain of gain. This dharma, this brings prasanatma, yajna supersedity, it brings great happiness. So we can look at foolish materialistic people, oh, you're working for the mango and you only get like one mango every 3 years, and even then sometimes you don't get it. Come, take to Krishna. But first we have to take. If we are telling everyone else, this medicine is so sweet, we have to also drink it. So this we should examine in our own life. Am I feeling joy at every moment? Am I experiencing life with a thrill at every moment? If we are not, then we are not accepting the position offered to us by the order of the Supreme. So let us not only teach this, but let us also take it. Let us drink this nectar. Prabhantiye bhagavata atmana satam katam tam shavana pateshu samvutam punantiye vishaya yudhusita svayam rajanti tachcharna sarovavutikam. Bhivanti, once you drink this katamrita, this nectar, which frees one from all lamentation and all illusion and brings one to the joyful life, to taste this nectar for which we are always anxious. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions?
When I was speaking in Sankirtan, I met a person. He said, I smoke cigarette when I'm having health problems. And I tell people, I'm still smoking, but you don't smoke. But I can't give up. But seeing me, they're giving up. I'm not able to give up.
Uh-huh. Yes? Oh, because he didn't finish. So one may say, if you don't finish, it's useless. And therefore you will die disappointed. But the success in Krishna consciousness is not like that. You don't have to finish something on the external platform. This is the view of the fruit of worker. The view of the fruit of worker is the process is miserable, and I'm just focused on the end product. And it has to be finished. If somehow it doesn't get finished, if I die before it's finished, or if it gets destroyed or something, then everything is wasted. This is the view of the fruit of worker. And this gives you a life of fear and anger, hankering fear and anger. But for the devotee, even unfinished, doesn't matter. Because every act itself is finished. Every little particle of time, every tiny moment, it is completed. The action is completed at every moment. So one is really tasting the fruit at every moment. Someone else may see from externally, oh, you didn't finish. Or you finished and it failed. But for the Vaishnava, it's not like that. For one who is in touch with by Bhakti Yoga, they're getting that fruit at every moment, and it's always increasing. Is that clear? Thank you. Somebody else?
We're speaking about Hiranyakashipu.
Ah.
He is talking so big, big philosophy, but he does not follow anything.
Exactly.
So do you think this in this Kali Yuga, we are all preaching so big, big philosophy and all that, but we don't follow, we are all some of the demon like?
No, not that we're demons. Anyway, the devotee may humbly think that they're a demon, not that you should think other people are demons.
We should be very careful.
But we should be careful that we actually, what the devotee said, which devotee, I forget, said to Mahaprabhu, Prachar Achar, you are preaching and you also follow. Some people do and don't teach, some people teach and don't do. I'll do both. Why not? If we actually believe that we are giving something wonderful, why should we not take it? And people will wonder, if it actually is wonderful, why are you not taking it?
Sometimes from doctors, when they write the prescription, they say it goes smoke, but it goes behind the screen.
Yes, it goes behind the screen and he is smoking. I mean, it's legitimate that we have weaknesses. That's not hypocrisy. if we say, you know, you should surrender to Krishna, and I am trying to surrender to Krishna, I am working at surrendering, I am coming to surrender to Krishna, that doesn't make you a hypocrite and a demon. I mean, an out-and-out hypocrite, they're hiding their actual behavior. Honest person says, no, I am not doing this perfectly, I have so many faults, but I am trying, and you please try also. That's an honest person. Hypocrite, they say, you know, don't do this, and secretly they are doing it. And they don't admit, they pretend to be something that they are not. But anyway, I wasn't focused so much on that. It's just, this is wonderful. Don't just talk about it, do it. Not criticize it. I wasn't criticizing that we are hypocrites or we are weak. But we are all accepting this, then do it. And you'll find that it's wonderful. If we are teaching others about Krishna consciousness, then just like my friend, we just have to listen to our own teaching. Actually, another friend just told me, I was telling her about this, and she said, yes, I keep a journal every day, and sometimes when I go back and read my journal, I can preach to myself. I'm reading my own journal, solves my own problems. So if we just simply take this philosophy that we are preaching, that is my point, and apply it to our own lives, then we'll become happy.
Also, Hiranyakashipu, though he was a demon, he had the compassion of the family members, unlike the moral parents. When somebody dies in the house, they don't even care to go attend the funeral ceremony.
Oh.
At least Hiranyakashipu had a sentiment to talk something about philosophy.
At least he had some. Well, you will very rarely find a demon who has no good qualities. I mean, we say in the Bhagavatam they have no good qualities, but that's on a different level. That means on a deep level. Yes. Well, you'll find even among the criminals, like the mafia, they're often kind to their own family members. There's a kind of mouse called a scorpion mouse. So generally mice are vegetarians, right? Correct? Generally mice, they eat grains and seeds and things like that. The scorpion mice eat, what do you think? Scorpions. They do, they eat scorpions. And they can be stung by the scorpions many, many times, and they don't die. They're fighting mice. I used to be a Gurukul teacher. I used to teach science and all these things. So the you don't think of mice as fighting, you know, but the mice, they fight with the scorpions and they kill the scorpions and they eat them. And the scorpion mice also, they're not very nice to the other scorpion mice. If other mice come, they fight with them and they will kill them also. So they're not very kind creatures, but they love their children very much. They mate for life. Male and female scorpion mice, they have one mate for life, and they are so attached to their babies. We had this science video we were watching in our school, and if one of their babies dies, like if some bird takes one of the babies, it was showing the mother and father, they're actually crying. They're hugging each other, they're crying, they're looking for their baby. So even among the cruel, you know, species, you may find some, because originally Prabhupada says this in the Nectar Devotion preface, that all of us want to love someone. This loving propensity, it is there in everyone. He said, even in a tiger. So even a demon will sometimes display some love towards somebody. You know, it's unusual that you find some living entity who doesn't externally display any affection for anyone. Sometimes. Yes, Ravana is crying for his son, exactly. So, and his brother, he loved his brother. So, generally, it's actually we want to love God. But if you don't love God, it will come out in some way. It will manifest in some way. Generally. Sometimes the jiva is so covered that they don't appear to love him. Anything else? Yes.
Finally, we went to spiritual world. So, because the son, Prahlad Maharaj, I want to understand Hiranyakashipu last birth, any devotional service he done?
Well, Hiranyakashipu is a very interesting person. Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Nrisimhadev comes over and over again, and usually the jiva who is Hiranyakashipu is actually a demon. But at least one time, the jiva who is Hiranyakashipu was actually a devotee who was playing this role. So in that case, yes, he had done some devotional service in the past. But also, anybody who gets killed by Vishnu, at least they enter into the Brahman. All of their karma is finished by getting killed personally by Vishnu. But that's not a very good method of liberation, because there's no guarantee you'll be such a big demon that Vishnu will come personally and kill you. So if you're thinking I'll get liberated that way, let me become a big demon, it probably won't work.
He's saying about previous life.
Yes, well, he had as Jaya and Vijaya, yes. Yes, Prabhu. Yes, that's a very good point. If you've actually realized, you give only the advice that you're following. Purity is the force. Yes, we're advised not to speak above our realization. We should speak according to our realization and not speak above. Of course, we can say, the goal of life is to have pure love of God. I don't have pure love of God yet, but I am also going toward that goal. It's not that if I see in my heart that I don't love Krishna purely, I can't talk about pure love of Krishna anymore. But still, we should take our own advice. If I'm going to say pure love of Krishna is the goal, then I should at least be going toward that goal. So I should examine in my life how much am I following what I actually believe. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.